It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I'm a man of very broad tastes, Kyle.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here and checking out the series. Of course, you know what to do if you like what you see, what you hear. Hit that subscribe button. I put out 3 new interviews every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at Spotify or Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Recent episodes have included John Roberts. He is the voice of Linda on Bob's Burgers. We had on Dave Davies from the Kinks, the band Inhaler, Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam, and I also talked to the cast of Apple TV Plus's City on Fire. Those are just recent episodes here at the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age. It's been a few years since we've been able to talk. It's been a few years since they've had a new album. But the band is back. It's called In Time's New Roman. It's their first since 2017. Josh and I are going to discuss how he's making music for all stereotypes and the music we liked as adults that we despised in our youth. And, of course, ultimately, how he's soundtracking his own life, which, like many of us, is pretty crazy right now. Josh is also going to dig deeper into the LP's more aggressive moments. We are going to go deep on his thoughts on why we even exist at all, and his knack of using gallows humor to even soften the blow of our very existence. It's a great conversation, one of my favorites. Let's dig into it and talk about In Time's New Roman. It's Kyle Meredith with Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age.
It's good to see you again. In Time's New Roman, I love this record. I've loved everything you guys done, and I've been such a fan for such a long time. This is such a masterfully powerful album. That's the compliments at the beginning.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now I'm uncomfortable, so thank you. You know, three things that embarrass me.
Okay.
Going shopping. You know, I don't get embarrassed. That's the thing. I'm fine with almost everything. But going shopping for clothes, because I don't do that. And then eating at a party where you have to stand up, like someone talking to someone like a plate of shrimp, it's like I'm like, get the fuck out of here with that.
Sure.
And third is receiving a compliment. So I'd like to take this minute to tell you to go fuck yourself.
I'm probably going to be told that a lot this interview, and I'm okay with that because I know why and what it means.
It just means, you know what it means? It means I'm just scared anyways. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the record's fucking great.
Stop it.
Let's get into it then. Let me ask you questions about this damn record, okay? First off, though, like Obscenery, we get into it and your lyrics are off the charts good. The wordplay is great. And right at the beginning, I feel like it's this Willy Wonka style introduction
I love that, actually. I love that.
I'm making music for all stereotypes. Like, I need you to have a cane when you do it, right? So do a little flip.
You're the first person to notice one of my favorite. For some reason, I feel like that line is of its time, right? Like, because it doesn't matter what side of the spectrum you're on, and you can pick any spectrum you like. But saying, I make music for all stereotypes, it's like, makes me happy. That's like that's my comfort zone. Because I feel like it's so accepting and also insulting at the same time that I think to myself, like, now would I do something like that? You know, I love all stereotypes.
Do you find that you're liking music that you would not have liked when you were much younger? Like the other day, the example, like Gilbert O'Sullivan's Alone Again Naturally comes on, and I'm right on board with it. Sure, I love it now, but I know that I didn't love it, you know, 20 years ago.
Sure, because when you're a kid, you try to revolt against your parents, and you find your thing, and you pick your ice cream flavor, and you make a little fence around it, and you're like, no one else licks Rocky Road, right? As if you're defending this ice cream flavor against a bully, right? You say, it's mine. You're trying to identify yourself in this cavalcade of static, right? And this is what you must do. And then all of a sudden, quickly, if you're in your mid to late 20s and you're not realizing that genre is for teenagers and people who work at a record store, you're in a big trouble. Because all of a sudden you're kind of like maybe you're a racist. I don't know. Like, you know, I mean, maybe you're not. That's maybe a bit extreme, but maybe you are. You know, I just think that, like, I don't have guilty pleasures because I don't feel bad, right? I'm in the pursuit of what I care about, and I think you are too. And so, you know, I'm listening to, when I make dinner, which is every night for me and my littles, I listen to Chet Baker and I listen to Astrid Gilberto and Stan Getz and Joao Gilberto. And then all of a sudden it's T-Rex and then it's the Cars and then it's, right? And then it's, Nilsson, Schmilsson, who am I to pretend I couldn't like Britney Spears' Toxic? What am I, a fool?
It's one of the greatest pop songs ever written.
Yeah, I mean, get out of my face with like telling me it's, I can't do stuff. I just, we're soundtracking our lives here. And being a DJ is bitching when you have the freedom to be bitching like that. When it's bitching, it's at the vanguard of like, oh my God, wait, you've got to hear this. You won't believe what's going to happen. So there's something about saying you won't believe what's going to happen at the beginning of a story that says, oh my God, reality is crazy. It's crazy. It's unimaginable, but so true, right? And I just, look, I'm soundtracking my own life, and I want to do a good job, you know? I want it to be real. And that's why the brutality of the sonic side of this record and the lyric side is, that's why it's like that, because life is fucking nuts. You know, I mean, I didn't come up with that. I'm just noticing it standing next to you like, wow, you know, consider my tiny mind blown, you know, but I get to do this for a living. So I'm going to do it full on, you know, pry my guitar out of my cold dead hand. I think Charlton Heston said that.
Specifically, exactly like that. I believe he said that. Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back right after this.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age.
Those moments, and it is a heavy record, and I can feel what you're talking about there, the projection of this life is crazy and the world is crazy right now. And there are those pockets, though, that I find bits of light. Time and space is one of them. You know, when I was reading the lyrics of that one, well, first off, though, I'll take a big swing here. There's a Charles Bukowski poem. It's my favorite one. It's called Art and Light and Time and Space.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. But I think when you're in the fight against this world for yourself, oftentimes you feel like the world's against you. That's not the case. The world is pursuing its own best interest, but you're in this world. And oftentimes the world's best interest is perpendicular to you. And every once in a while, it's what they call Mexican standoff or game of chicken. This is what I've tried to avoid my whole life, this game of chicken, this Mexican standoff, like, and because it's dangerous in that moment. But you need to know when it's the moment to look at someone and say, name the time, name the place, motherfucker. And I believe in this. I in the moments of profound loss and confusion, disbelief, sadness and love, happiness, joy, and appreciation. Every once in a while, you have a moment where you're like, I don't fucking fight you right now. And someone says you're going to lose, and you're like, what does that have to do with it? I'm going to bite your fucking ear off. You know, I'll leave you forever changed. You know, that's, and I romanticize these moments. These are ideals. These are moments where they don't define your character. They reveal it. And I love these. I treasure these moments. You know, someone was mentioning, they said the word machismo in regards to paper machete and time and place. And I was like, no. In the film of the soundtrack of your life, it's my job to freeze the frame, take a single celluloid moment, distill that drop, and make a sonic photograph of that. And sometimes, and I've sing about my own being terrified and being in love, being rejected, being all those things. But this person was focusing in on the fact that sometimes I'm angry. But also I'm a fighter, so sometimes I fight. And sometimes I fight for the wrong reason, but I fight nonetheless because I know it's real, right? It's not machismo. It's the willingness to throw yourself over the cliff of what you believe in.
Which is beautiful. I mean, that is beautiful. And that it sort of reminds me of Carnivore too. You know, we got the second single there because that's one of my favorite moments. That line, when there's nothing I can do, I smile. And I'm now speaking of stereotypes, I'm about to turn 42. I'm thinking about things that you think about when you get into your 40s. And I think about what if none of it matters and nothing happens after, and it's all this is just it. And I get a line like that, and I think, well, at least there's that solace that fuck it.
You know, I think could the fact that you exist all be to service the furtherance of nothing? And I say that without context for religion or anything else. Religion is born of this notion, but it doesn't answer this notion. I guess my rhetorical question to you is, are you here to service the proof of nothing? You know, I don't care about the earthly interpretations of why and what. There's life's big questions. I can answer one of them. Why are we here? I can give you a temporary answer for why are we here.
Which is?
Because you are, so you better get started. Right? And it's not the final answer. I did not create the wheel, and I'm retarded. And I don't care if you're not supposed to use that word, and none of that matters. These are just noises my face is making. I'm just saying, regardless of what I say, you're here. You better get started. And this is about nowism. You're here now. 5 minutes from now is always 5 minutes from now. And yesterday is gone, my friend. And so this, we're talking. This is all you'll ever get. This is all I'll ever get. I need to make sure that we're good right now because there's nothing else to do. And I'm okay with that, you know, or I wouldn't be here, you know, but you don't need to do anything. It's like, I need to make money. I need to do this. Fuck you. You don't need to do any of that. What you need to do is move at the speed of inspiration and pursue what's worth going after. And it's an utterly American perspective at times, it feels, to say such a thing. Yet here we are. And that doesn't matter either. That's just someone's critique of your ability to recognize that now is important. But fuck those people too. You know, I to take a calculated risk is all that I see in life. And the people that eat peanuts and throw the shells into the ring, they mean nothing. They are nothing. It is nothing. They create the static that's the same when the TV goes off. I just, you know, what can you do, man? You know, what can you do? You know?
I mean, I can't agree with any of that more. And I really do mean that. Like, that is exactly what I was getting out of this. That's exactly what I was hearing about in all of this.
Well, there's a great thing which people call gallows humor. Of course, you know about it. And of course, everyone knows about it. There's a great documentary, too, about offending people and gallows humor. And there's a story about two guys who are in Auschwitz. And in order to survive, they've taken a job doing the most horrific things, which is like taking bodies to the crematorium. And they've seen their people they know, and they're taking a break. And God, I hope I get this story right. Dr. Joseph Mengele walks in. He's in a long, almost floor-length leather coat. And these guys are exhausted. Now they're talking about gallows humor, mind you. And they're having a moment to stop. And Mengele comes in and goes, "Open your mouth." And he looks at the guy's teeth and he says, "You need to take better care of your teeth." And he walks away. And one guy says to the other, he goes, "Oh, nice." And the other guy says, "Yeah, nice coat." And they start laughing. And this is my perspective of life too. You know, when life is tough, it's when life is good, it's funny. And when life is really rough, it's really funny. You know? And I think when life is hard, you need to make fun of it. To soften the blow. If you don't make fun where there was none, all you have left is to take it really serious. And I just refuse to do it. I refuse to do it.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. And in those moments, in those Willy Wonka moments in the face of utter darkness, I love this record so much.
Willy Wonka is a very dark character.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Both versions, Johnny and Gene Wilder, are very dark, perverse characters.
It feels like a good company to be in. And seriously, this record in Times New Roman, it's so good. I cannot wait to see it live. You're going to be here in Louisville September 24th at the Louder Than Life Festival. And I will be there front row.
I'll be there too, front row. Yeah. It's the different, the other side of the front row, but I'll be right there.
Josh, thank you so much for taking the time. This is always such an honor.
Cheers.
Now, Josh has stopped by the show a few times over the years. The most recent time, though, was all the way actually back in 2016. This is when he teamed up with Iggy Pop to talk about the record they did together called Post-Pop Depression. I'm going to include that one here and another one here in just a few moments. But this one, we dig into crooning, fear, sex, and death. All that and a whole lot more. This is part two of Josh Homme and features Iggy Pop.
Hey, hi, Kyle.
How are you?
I'm great. It's good to be talking to you both.
I like Louisville.
Yeah, so do I. I love living here.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nice town. I like your airport.
It's a small airport. Yeah, they call
it. That's why I like it.
Yeah, they call it an international airport, but it's not real. It's not true.
Well, but you know, it's not the size of the airport. It's the motion of the flights. So.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing in our case. We have a lot we have a lot to overcompensate for, I guess. Hey,
your words, not mine.
We should jump in here. I know we're on time limit, and I know I'm another cog in the whole thing today. So I do want to congratulate you guys on Post-Pop Depression. What a fun record. Sometimes a scary record, but mostly a fun record.
I'm glad you got yeah. that. But I think sometimes did you notice this, Ig, that sometimes just because the word depression is there, people go, well, it's so dark.
I know.
Like, just
first guy that's caught the fun in the record.
It's a total fun record. It is.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there's a lot of different moods that go along with it. And in fact, what I actually heard on Showcase, Iggy, was your voice. And
Josh was very kind to me as an arranger. He left all sorts of space for the vocals, and he wrote some killer melodies, and he got me the best engineer.
Yeah, Mark Rankin is
Mark Rankin, who worked with Adele, mm-hmm. baby.
Yeah.
And you sound just like Adele. I can vouch for that.
When you have Kanye West's auto-tune, you can do anything. And I had a studio musicians and all this team of writers that wrote the, I forgot, but they're amazing.
So amazing.
We weren't actually there. It was just other people.
Right. But in truth, though, you know, I know through the years, you know, when you think of Iggy Pop, you know, it's not always the first thing that comes to mind with the voice. But your last few records, those French songs particularly,
Them French songs. Louisville.
Yeah.
The French songs were my kind of homework leading up to this record. And that the reason I made those was I hadn't been successful in finding anybody in the English-speaking world who wanted to let me just sing and sing melody and be a baritone. So I found that in the French songbook more, and also some of Sinatra's old stuff I was covering. Yeah. And it gave me good practice for...
I think it was a great reveal, too, about there's all these crooning moments throughout your catalog.
Right.
And that's was this, these concentrated crooning moments, which as a fan, for me, were... I was like, yeah, no, it's a no-brainer. That's the what I'd love to hear. And I think, you know, this... At first, we were in agreement to not box this in and define it because it just wasn't necessary. But it became clear that this is an Iggy Pop record, and that means that the music can't. Mark Lanegan had this, always would say to me, "Do whatever you want as long as you turn it down." but he said that because he can be very cruel, honestly. I love that he said that because it was like, don't challenge this. And I really think that's intelligent. When you have that crooning moment, you let it shine, you know.
Yeah. I guess for you, Josh, that actually working with Mark this whole time, and I hadn't thought about it, does also set you up to work with Iggy with one of those great baritone voices and how to make it work within the rock structures of this style, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the luxury of collaborating with, I mean, a lot of people, and the experience of that has all sort of been this wonderful, you know, natural preparation to be ready and feel comfortable doing this, and so I'm really thankful for that. And and guys like Mark are also a one of a kind voice and fella. And so the understanding of recognizing when somebody has just something that is unlike everyone else in itself is a cool thing to have experience with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think someone once called me a shepherd of the weird. But I really think that it's
that's pretty good.
I think really what it is accepting people for who they are, not attempting to, you know what you should do.
Right.
You should get, you know, you should get this job and walk the, you know, I love enjoying people as they are and turning that up. There you go.
Well, Iggy, for you, and while we're talking about this, I can't imagine at this point, like, you really have anything to prove. But did it seem like, because it feels like you did want to put that voice out there like that. Is this like the last thing?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to prove.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it was about that.
It was exactly
and
about
also,
that.
And also about having something being able to engage lyrically, having something to say, those right. two things.
There's a lot of interesting things that you said on here. It seems like sex and death were running through a lot of the themes, which well, I appreciate you not, you know, you can say that they can exist.
Yeah, yeah. Sex and death, baby. Yeah. But, I mean, I've got to also, don't forget, tamales and bank account. That's very important.
There's something between yeah, them. Yeah. So.
It's not like I'm not a realistic guy. I realize everybody needs two things. You need a bank account. You need some tamales before you can go with the sex and the dying.
And then you can die once it's over.
Yeah. It's over. The connecting thread.
Actually, I like that. Go have sex and die.
Yeah, right. Well, that is the French, you know, the little death.
Thing. Yeah, the little
there it is again. There it is again. There is, I don't think I want to interrupt that again. That's, there's one line, though, that so stands. I mean, there's a few lines, I guess. But when you do the repeating line, I have nothing but my name, it goes from this. It sounds like it's like a call for help at first and then turns into a battle cry that really reminds me of, like, I will fight no more forever.
I will yeah. fight what forever?
I will fight no more forever.
Oh, that was Josh's idea. Mm-hmm. I had the line in the song, and he dared me.
To, double dog, actually.
Yeah, just talk it twice yeah. at the end. So he saw something there and pushed it another step. And it's quite an experience just saying that. And then I started to think, you know, you start to think, is that okay?
Yeah, well, I mean, that, I yeah. think things like that in the wrong hands yeah. are traditionally you're forced to deal with something like a spoken moment at the end in the wrong hands. Mm-hmm. And so you're a bit brain trained to immediately jerk your hands back and go, oh, well, no, no, no. But I think this situation had this allowance to, there's an emotional shift that happens. You hear that and it's slow, so there's time.
Right.
And so you actually get to sort of traverse this emotional gap. And this was the moment to try things that are uncomfortable, because that's where it works, you know.
I've noticed several people, it seems to be a grabber for mm-hmm. some people.
That's like the scream in Lobby,
yeah.
too, is another
well,
you know, things
yeah,
like that.
I was thinking, you know, when the early rockabilly and rock started in the 50s, the shocking thing about it was that these people were screaming. You were supposed to sing nice, mm-hmm. and you were supposed to sing like Perry Como or Bing Crosby or sing nice, you know. And then all of a sudden there were these screaming people, but now what we've had, like, what, 65 years of screaming?
Yes, right. Yeah.
And so to achieve the same kind of shock, you almost have to find a quiet moment and just say something.
Yeah,
maybe.
Make someone hang for a
yeah.
sec.
Yeah,
you know, that so hang time.
It was a good idea he had.
The other extreme. You talk about that. I mean, there are yelling parts and everything. Is that for you genuine anger, or is that part of the entertainment of rock and roll?
Oh, it's fake anger.
Fake anger.
Yeah, you're talking about the soliloquy or monologue at the end of Paraguay. And what happened, you know... You know, Picasso used to say, I paint what I see, and I'm a front guy, so I say, well, I'll sing what you give me.
Yeah,
so in that part of that song, the song was something I had written before I called Josh. I was at a loss creatively. And I wanted to continue in that sort of, if you will, the certain French direction I'd been hinting at with melody and feeling. And I wrote the verse and chorus to that about how I just wanted to walk away. Mm-hmm. Just walk away. I felt like, why don't I? I've got enough money. And I knew I wasn't gonna. You know?
Well, that's what I think is interesting yeah. about the song. When we add that end part, oh. it almost feels like, you know, the dream is I'm going to get away, but then yeah. you realize I'm not going to make it.
No.
Actually, I'm
and so
like,
Josh,
oh, fine, fuck you then.
Josh wrote the words and music of the middle eight, mm-hmm. put a bridge to the song, which we do a lot of back and forth like that. And then he wrote that sadistic outro. Says, boy, I mean, you want to, okay, you want to have a little rock and roll on this record? Here's some rock and roll. Jesus Christ. And it feels like it's love. It's like the most pleasure I've ever gotten out of a whipping. It felt like a whipping. And it was so strong in the room. And Matt Helders was asking him a question about how, at what points he wanted him to develop the intensity of the beat. And Josh just waved a hand in my general direction and said, I don't know. It's all up to whatever he does right now.
No pressure. Yeah,
no pressure, right? So I was on the spot. So what you've got there is I tried to delve in to the next step, or in other words, the original verse and chorus are kind of polite. Mm-hmm. And now, what's really bothering this guy? Yeah. What's bothering me?
He won't
and
make
so
it.
It came out, and it was genuine, but I also realized it's funny, too.
Sure.
You know, some of it is, I know that, you know, so
But it took us aback when that, because we only played it four times, that whole song, and it, each ending was different. And each time we looked at each other, you know, I don't know if you picked this up, but we were like, wait a minute, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, it stopped us in our tracks. It was amazing.
Let me tell you, I was listening on a laptop, by the way, when I heard that, and I just wanted to shrink and disappear. I know.
This is you. No, yeah, I'm talking to you.
And then I have to interview them the next day? Oh, great.
It was not written out, by the way. It was, it's ad lib, thoughtful ad lib. Yeah. I would describe it as.
It's such a powerful moment, and just to, while we're on the subject of lyrics, to throw this other one in there. Everybody's scared. Fear eats all the souls at once. I thought a mantra of our time, if I've ever heard one.
I certainly noticed.
I agree.
The incessant news flashes in the. It's been. Over a year since that was recorded, mm-hmm. that vocal, and I seemed to hit a wave. Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah,
but I think the record is that there's an important side of that for me. That you know, your life is kind of the measure of a life is the fears you've faced. You don't have to, if you face them, you don't have to be unafraid of them because some shit is scary. But at least you know, and I think that. Mantra of this for the record too is pursuing things that feel a little bit odd or uncomfortable at first, but that's where the good vulnerable stuff is. And that line is should be written down and nailed to every wall in town.
It really should.
I mean, I realized that it's kind of dumb to imagine that I could just transfer all my funds to a bank in Paraguay, buy a little compound in the trees, and receive love and affection from my servants and bodyguards.
But it's worth a thought, man. It would be great.
But I think about it.
If you did it, I could come over. You know, I'm thinking like,
I realize that's not the way. That's not a nice guy thing.
Yeah. Thanks for leaving me here.
I think of that, and then you open your eyes, and you're stuck in the muck where you really are.
Right.
Where it's
right.
Like, God damn it, I'm not going to make it.
Right.
You know, if I just shut my on the inside of my eyelids, just tattooed this dream. You know.
So I had to settle for Miami.
You had to settle for Miami.
You can almost see Paraguay from there.
I'm headed to Turks and Caicos on my honeymoon in a couple of weeks, and maybe I'll just stay there. I'll take your advice, and
I'll
stay there.
Would you say Turks and Giggles?
Sure.
Would you say you're
Turks
you're
and Caicos? It's islands beyond Florida,
I'm from the desert. I don't know enough about that.
Anyway,
all right. You like it. They're desert islands.
Yeah. There's no... Right. Yeah, it's really sand? Like, sand. Yeah. Yeah, good. I'm cool with that.
Well, thank you, guys. It is a unique record. It's a beautiful record, and it is a fun record all the way to the apocalypse. I mean, it honestly is sex and death. A good time till it's over.
Well, you got to listen to something during both, so.
That's right. All right. Thank you guys so much for taking the time. I appreciate
it. See you later.
Now, part three of this episode takes us back to 2013. I think this was the first time that Josh and I had ever done an official interview for my series. This was backstage at that year's ACL Festival down in Austin. We were talking about the album Like Clockwork. its comparisons to earlier material from them, and how he's was keeping the big rock torch alive. Part three of Kyle Meredith with Josh Homme.
Kyle Meredith, Josh Homme, Queens of the Stone Age. Welcome back to the world of rock and roll.
Thank you.
You didn't really leave, but I guess...
It's gone for a couple years.
Yeah, you did other things.
Yeah, I was like, I think I was like wandering around my backyard looking for something.
I think that's what Wayne Coyne does in his spare time. He just, yeah. He's the crazy guy in Oklahoma.
Glass of wine, just like kind of trying to find it.
Yeah. You look good in that kind of image in my head.
Yeah.
No, it's great. Like Clockwork, you've written this fantastic record. In fact, I'm already hearing people call it their favorite albums of the year and all that stuff. So that's nice.
So that's good. Anyways.
No, it's cool, though, because, you know, I would imagine as an artist, you know, it's always about that, I want to do something new. I want to prove myself every time. Is it frustrating at all that, you know, critics started right out of the gate saying, oh, wow, Queens of Stone Age are back, and he did something like Songs for the Deaf, and he did something like Rated R?
Well,
because it starts out like that.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that... I don't mean this the wrong way, but everyone else is always just behind you. They can only comment about what you've done.
Sure.
And they need some kind of touchstone to draw it close, you know? And so much about records is sort of the timing and the atmosphere. And these things that are really kind of hard to quantify, too, you know? Because people are, you know, some people have said, you know, lyrically, this is so much more real. And I think to myself, it's not more real, it just starts from a more desperate place.
It's not so unfounded that they said that. You did bring back some of the old cast, you know, from the early days. They're there. Of course, you brought in some more.
And I think to myself, how little tricks are work so well.
How do you mean?
Well, sometimes it's really easy to, I guess, you know, it's easier to catch flies with sugar than a swatter.
Yeah. You're just leading us into this question is what you're doing with journalists. But they were there. The artwork was similar. What I'm saying is it wasn't totally unfounded. But what you did, you took all of these amazing people, collaborators, and you didn't make, I mean, this isn't a Santana record, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right.
That's what it is. If you didn't know that they were on the record, you wouldn't know this anybody in the world, I guess.
Yeah, but I think what when we collaborate with someone, we're asking them to be part of our gang.
Yeah.
And to sort of agree to be absorbed in our world the way we agree to get immersed in our own world, yeah, too. It's not about dry humping someone's name to get further. It's about an earnest collaboration with someone. And I don't mean Ernest Goes to Camp, you know? And so...
Had some great songs in it.
Yeah, and which I did all three of the soundtracks except for Ernest Goes to Prison.
Now you will.
Yeah. But with the exception of Elton,
right,
who I didn't know before, right, everyone else is people that I know that I care about quite a bit and are really talented people. And so why wouldn't you want to collaborate with them? And in particular... If it's not like, as I said, it's to be part of our gang and to do something cool together.
Well, it's done in such a tasteful way is what I'm getting at.
Well, you know, I appreciate
which
that.
Which is really nice to...
I think, you know, initially when people were seeing who was on the record, based on they were saying things and we hadn't said anything.
Right.
But it was almost detrimental at first because it created a strange balloon.
The expectation.
That is difficult to wrangle. Because it becomes about what someone wants completely. And, you know, one of those things, something like that, whatever you think it's going to be, it definitely won't be that because you're not there, you know? And so it can be difficult to overcome that, you know? But I think it's gone well.
I think it's gone great.
Yeah, it's been really nice.
When you're working with those people, you were kind of talking about, you know, people are calling it a personal record. For you, it's just something that came from a dark spot or a desperation spot. When you're working with that kind of material, though, when you're working with your the regular Queens cast or, you know, the collaborators or whatever, you're still using your soul in a way that normal people wouldn't. You know, you've got to lay it out there and then use it in collaboration, which would seem like they're going to take something and make it something different that maybe you didn't have in the beginning.
I don't want to try to make someone happy by veering off. This isn't that situation. This is a situation where you, like, bear it all. And that can only be done as a device for yourself. You know?
Well, it's something that lasts long.
Well, I mean, I get to play music for a living. We could do something classic that could change somebody's everything.
Yeah.
And it could change my everything. You know, like, what am I going to do? Like, ask around and make sure it's okay first? It just doesn't factor in there. It's just not right. Just that everything about that doesn't seem right to me, you know?
Did you at any point say, okay, you know, you had Vultures, you were doing Vultures, but it was 6 years between Queens and Stone Age Records. Did you ever have that wonderment, like, are we relevant? Because you're doing a sound.
We've never been relevant.
Yeah, that's not true.
No, I mean, we play heavy metal festivals because we're not heavy metal.
Right.
We play, like you know, like hippie festivals because we're not hippie. We're always the ginger on someone's palate. Yeah. We're not really part of the scene. And like, sometimes I wish we were, but then other times I feel like, no, this is the way it is. This is how it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you're keeping big rock alive when bands aren't doing that. When most bands are playing the trend, you guys are
not
doing
on
this
purpose.
Great rock scene.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just, like, I gotta be me.
Right, right, right. Well, I mean, even like the Stones did disco in disco era, you know? And
yeah, but they did it great.
Sure. And maybe you could do
it. And I think there's a way to do all things as long as you like it. If someone doesn't like it, I mean, go fuck yourself. I don't really care.
But see, like, yeah. You did do this, and probably unintentionally, you went from this spot in your career 6 years ago when you were here, and when you came back, it's suddenly like you were a much bigger rock star because you weren't here. I mean, there was a day in your early bands when you were against Rockstar, right?
Well, I come from listening to Black Flag and
sure.
GBH,
right,
like, do well, but don't do too well. And really, infiltrating and destroying is all I ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
And really, that's what I really enjoy most now. Corruption is one of my favorite hobbies. You know, I love to burn it all down because that gives us a chance to start over and apply something we knew to something new.
Right, right.
And I don't see much in convention that isn't worth retilling and starting over, you know what I mean? So I think this is just a chance to sort of like explode your feelings, your desire, how far you're trying to reach. That has nothing to do with how many records you sold. It's just a desire to like touch a moment for a second that's beyond people, you know what I mean? Like, if I could just touch it for a second, I could die happy, you know? And I don't want to like listen to, like, naysayers, they say nay, that's all they say. They don't matter. And people that love your music, then let's celebrate together. But we gotta stretch and reach as far as we can, you know? I mean, that's what this is.
That's beautiful words.
Well,
do you think age played into that at all? Do you think age played into that at all? I mean, what, you're coming up on 40, you hit 40?
I'm 40 now. I turned 40 this year.
Congratulations.
Well, I don't know. I just know that that I know now more than ever, you have to tell your truth without any filter, and damn the torpedoes, man.
What should I know about being 40? 32. What's the emotions I'm going to go through to get there?
You know what? I have an inner calm that I wish would be on the outside, too.
All right, Josh. Like clockwork.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll see you around.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And my thanks to Josh Homme. The new Queens of the Stone Age record is called In Time's New Roman. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. You do that, I give you 3 brand new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover the new ones at Spotify and Apple Podcasts, at NPRWFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And then after that, do me a favor, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's got classic songs. It's got bonus interviews. It's got anniversary spins. We have a whole lot of fun. In fact, a recent show I did had the music of Depeche Mode and Radiohead, Nine Inch Nails, as well as Billie Holiday, Nina Simone, Sly and the Family Stone, The Kills, Brandi Carlile, The Clash, Blur, Tori Amos, Fishbone, The Breeders, Jesus and Mary Chain, Childish Gambino, My Morning Jacket, Neil Young, and an interview with actress Harriet Walter, who recently starred as the mom in both Succession and Ted Lasso. Not Ted's mom, though. But that's just a typical show that you can find 6 p.m. every weekday at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All three of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
See you on the flip.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.